me to retreat into my old self. Below me, Shadow Man grinned wickedly, daring me to escape my inevitable future. I knew then that no matter what happened today or tomorrow, my struggle with Shadow Man wasn't over. Not until I had all five seals. Rage washed over me, and I screamed at the unfairness of it all. The room returned only silence. It was just me in my living room, a girl born blind so that God's glory could be revealed in her. "Who have you become, dear daughter?" I stilled at the gentle whisper, struck by the truth that sprang from inside of me. "Nothing different," I whispered. "The same as I was. Your daughter." "Then see yourself as her and be her. The light of the world, in Christi, be that light. In light there is no darkness, only the shadow it creates in the world of polarity. Shadow Man." I swallowed and turned my thoughts away from what my eyes did or didn't see. My role in this life was the 49th mystic. I couldn't let physical blindness stop me from trying, one step at a time. I had to do something. I paced again, thinking through my options. Above all, to the best of my ability, I couldn't let anyone know that I was blind again. Jacob said that my eyes looked normal, apart from a redness that would clear. I needed the town's trust. The fact that I'd been healed gave me at least some respect. But that meant I couldn't betray my blindness by clicking with my tongue. Using echolocation, the only way to see is to send out a signal that bounces off of what lies ahead. You click, you read the signals, you move. That's how you walk through the darkness, one step at a time, not knowing what's ahead. Like faith. I would use a tap or a snap of my fingers if need be. I could still read the returning signals, if not as clearly. I had to get to Linda's. The note from last night made that clear. But Linda lived on the north side of town. Barth's lookouts would be everywhere. Vlad would be watching. Vlad. I had only two of the seals. But first, I would find my father. It took me 20 minutes to get ready, only because I moved slowly, going deep into my mind, rehearsing my experiences in other earth while I steadied my resolve in this one. To the extent I kept my focus on the light I'd seen as Justin and as me, I could remain in that vine of truth, even if I was blind. Taking a deep, calming breath, I opened the kitchen door and stepped out into Eden. I walked around the side of our house, clicked toward the town center. As far as I could tell, the streets were empty. My first instinct had been to stay out of sight by taking the long way around the town to Linda's house, but I was no longer worried about being discovered. Barth would have come to my house if he wanted me dead. Gathering courage, trying not to think of my blindness, I walked out on the lawn dressed in jeans, a black shirt, and my Converse tennis shoes. Three rows of houses stood between me and the town square. I walked straight for Third Street, uncaring who saw me. I had cut through the Botswick's lawn when I heard John yelling inside the house. John Botswick, butcher by trade, parent of two with his wife, Melanie. They were in their 30s and had married in Eden. I stopped by the hedge and listened. Melanie's voice drifted through the wall. "I don't care what you think is best for us. We've lived here this long without any problems. We just have to get back to normal." There is no normal anymore. John roared. I can't even leave this house without fear of someone putting a bullet in my head. You call that normal? I said we have to get back to normal. That's not going to happen if you go out there and cause trouble. That certainly won't happen if you try to break out of the valley into whatever's out there. Well, I can tell you one thing, he snapped. What's in here? What's under this sky they put over us? It has a name. Barth. And as long as Barth has any power, we're all doomed. If you think we have a chance with that lunatic waving his gun around, you're not thinking. Oh, but you, John Botswick, you have it all figured out, right? Oh, wait, no, that's David. All you have to do is kill Barth, and everything will magically fix itself. You think Barth doesn't have half the town cringing behind him? What do you want? War? They have guns. David said so himself. If it's war. I didn't hear the rest, because I was already walking away, imagining the chaos behind every closed door in Eden. Vlad had gotten to my father. I was sure of it. My father was a scientist, not given to impulsiveness. Vlad was manipulating him, sure that I would finally capitulate for fear of his life. I had to save my father without writing Vlad into the book. Thinking nothing of my safety, I passed the last house on our block and walked down the middle of Third Street, headed north. There was a large tree on the corner of Second, which ran east-west, and Third, which ran north-south. I could navigate most of the town from memory without echolocation, but I clicked for added comfort anyway. The square came into view as soon as I passed that tree. The streets surrounding the town square were empty, but the square itself wasn't. I made out three forms, probably Barth's men, two at the entrance to the courthouse, one leaning against the door of Bill's Hardware, dead ahead. There were knives and axes in that store, and a host of other things that could probably be turned into weapons. Made sense they would guard it. I kept my eyes directed straight ahead and walked on without missing a beat. None of them called out to stop me. There were no fireworks. It was just me, the blind girl who could now see, walking through the town square. But that changed when I was within 20 paces of the hardware store. Clicking nonchalantly with my fingers, I saw the form step out to the curb, assault rifle hanging from his right hand.
That's far enough.
Bill Baxter. He was guarding his store. Was he with Barth now? I could hear the fear in his voice. I kept walking, eyes fixed past him to the north, my four working senses hyper-alert.
I said stop.
I didn't stop.
Take one more step, and I swear.
You'll what, Bill? I asked, stopping in the middle of the road, 10 feet from where he stood. Put a bullet in my head? Kill the only thing Vlad Smith wants in this town? Be my guest. I could hear the soft scrape of his wristwatch on the rifle. I didn't know you were a man of violence.
What do you expect me to do?
His voice was lower now, meant for me alone.
Just roll over and let it all happen.
I think you'd be looking for a way to make contact with DARPA.
We have. Four of us went to the tunnel last night. There's no way out. Even if there was, we'd be dead long before we got anywhere.
So he'd seen what my father and I had seen.
For the record, I know Barth's turned into a monster, and all monsters get what's coming to them, he said. But he's not the real threat. Vlad Smith is. Way I see it, as long as he's in the picture, we're all doomed. The only way to get to Vlad is by playing his game until we figure out his weakness. We can't even figure out where he keeps disappearing to. So yeah, I'm out here protecting what little I have left in this world. because people are making enemies, and in this town, no one knows what to do with enemies but kill them.
He took a breath.
If people would just shut up and do as they were told, I wouldn't need to be out here. Tell that to your father, if you manage to find him.
By the sound of it, my father was fast becoming enemy number one. I'm going to find my father, Bill, I said, drilling him with a fake stare. You're going to let me go because stopping me will only cause you trouble. I turned back up the street and started to walk.
Why, for heaven's sake, won't you just write in that freaking book of his?
He asked. Because Vlad's not who you think he is, I said. And for the record, I'm pretty sure guns won't work with him. The last part was only a guess. It took me another 10 minutes to reach the Loving residence. I encountered 4 more guards as I walked through the northern half of town. Only one of them tried to stop me, but I ignored him without speaking a single word, and apart from a string of strenuous threats, he let me go. It was as I suspected. Vlad had given Barth the order to leave me alone. Taking a deep breath, reminding myself to hide my blindness, I rapped on the door. No answer, so I knocked again, and a third time. Surely they could see me through the eyehole. The door suddenly opened, and my father grabbed my hand, yanked me in, slammed the door shut behind me, rammed home the deadbolt. No one else was in the room. He spun around.
What are you doing? Do you have any idea what's going on out there?
You didn't come home last night.
I did come home. You were sleeping.
By the strain in his voice, I doubted he'd slept, here or there. I could smell the sweat on his clothes, probably the same clothes from yesterday. Bill tells me you've been busy, I said.
You talked to Bill? What's gotten into you? Wandering around on your own.
A beat.
You okay?
Could he tell I was blind? My eyes, maybe. I said the first thing that came to mind that might throw him off any thought of what was happening to me in this world. I was taken captive with Jacob, son of Kurong, and put on trial, I said. When he answered, his voice was laced with dismissal and pity.
Don't you see, sweetheart? Your mind's programmed with those dreams in there. None of them are real.
The programming doesn't work on my mind.
Would you rather have me believe that you're being taken into captivity with some fellow named Jacob? Just try to imagine how that sounds to me.
He had a point.
Look. Freud would be the first to say your dreams are cathartic,
my father said, taking my arm.
Judging by your confidence, he was right. As far as I'm concerned, you just keep on having those dreams. But right now, I have to show you something.
He hadn't mentioned my eyes, and when I tapped my thigh and snapped my fingers as we walked, he didn't seem to notice. That was good. But how long could I keep up the charade? Someone was making a sandwich in the kitchen, but I didn't notice anyone else on the first floor. My father led the way down the stairs to the basement, me following the sound of his every step, one of the first ways I'd learned to maneuver as a little girl. All council members had similar reinforced basements, bunkers loaded with supplies to supplement the main stores in the event the worst happened. Like a nuclear war. Even in this detail, DARPA had been deliberate. When the day finally came for the residents of Eden to learn the truth, they would already be primed to accept the stark reality of nuclear war and fallout. It was a part of every psyche in Eden. The whole town had been preparing for what had already happened. Any other group of people might very well be pulling their hair out,
not the loyal, brainwashed residents of Eden. They were more concerned with the direct threats within the valley. Evidently, DARPA hadn't planned for Vlad Smith. My father pushed through a door at the bottom of the stairs and led me into a huge room lit by hissing kerosene pressure lamps. The town still had no electricity. I felt beads of sweat on my forehead as I tapped and strained for the view I could manage. No fewer than a dozen forms milled about near one wall and a table in the center of the room. I could smell the sacked grains and tins. Survival stuff.
"What about this section?"
Linda's voice. She was standing next to another form, tapping what had to be a map.
"It was too dark, and it's steeper than a steeple there. I doubt anyone could get up there, definitely not kids."
"I don't care how steep it is," Linda snapped. "Hank, mark section 27 to be searched again as soon as the sun goes down."
"It's pitch black out there at night."
"That's what the flashlights are for, Hank."
"No, flashlights are for getting shot at. Searching in conditions like these is absurd."
Linda spun to Hank.
"How dare you suggest searching for my children is absurd," she yelled.
"I didn't say..."
"I don't care what it takes or who gets shot in the process. We're finding them. Get that through your thick skull."
The room stilled.
My father stepped up to the table.
"Take a breath, all of you. The last thing we need is to fight each other. The fastest way to find the children is to take back control of the town. Once we get the guns this afternoon, you'll have all the cover you need to search. We have to get those guns before Barth and his goons have time to react."
He turned to another form.
"Any more luck with the recruiting?"
"Anyone else? And we run the risk of leaking information to the wrong party."
I recognized Scott Wilson's voice.
"Fine. 24 it is. Between the distraction and the assault on the armory, we'll need them all."
I'd tapped nervously as he talked, noting at least 4 sleeping on couches, 2 more along the far wall, maybe in sleeping bags. Half of echolocation is puzzle-solving, putting bits of information from all available senses together to make educated guesses. My mind was working furiously to form the best picture possible.
"Any argument?"
my father demanded.
"All the guns in the world won't help us if any harm comes to my children before we find them,"
Linda pressed.
"Which is why we're going this afternoon,"
my father said, then turned to me.
"Rochelle's joining us. She's talked to Bill Baxter. Any chance he'd join us?"
I could feel their eyes on me. All of them. I stepped up to their table and feigned a glance over what I assumed was another map.
"What's this?"
"Sniper positions," Scott said. "On rooftops."
My lungs felt heavy. There wasn't enough oxygen in the crowded space. My father had never served in the military, but he seemed to have the mind for it. But it was more than that. Like Linda, my father wasn't thinking clearly. Even if they did get the guns, more guns would only mean more death. I had to find a way to stop them.
"So?" Linda said. "Any chance Bill will join us?"
"He's with Barth."
"You're sure?"
"He's parked outside the hardware store, armed with an assault rifle right now, and they already know something's coming. Try for the guns, and it's gonna all go wrong."
"It already has gone wrong," my father said. "We've lived under someone else's thumb for too long. Whether that was Simon's, DARPA's, or Barth's hardly matters now. No more. We have Smith behind us. We move now."
"Behind you? He's the real threat here. Surely you can see that. Even Bill knows that much."
"Maybe, but not right now," my father said. "Now it's Barth, and Smith won't interfere.
We have to take Barth down before he takes us down, or there won't be anyone around to deal with Smith.
Smith told you he wouldn't stop you?
He did.
So he's playing you against each other, telling Barth to kill anyone who defies his law, then telling you to go after Barth. Don't you see?
Be that as it may,
Linda said, voice strained.
Without Vlad Smith, we all die. We need him, at least for now. But we don't need Barth. As long as he's alive, no one's free in this valley.
Their plan said only one thing to me. More dead bodies. I wanted to tell them what I knew. Everything I'd experienced in other Earth. But I knew that telling them would accomplish nothing. I had to show them. More to the point, I had to show my father before he ended up dead. And I knew exactly how I would show him.
Is there any doubt in this room that when all is said and done, Vlad Smith is the greatest threat to this valley? I asked them.
No one spoke.
You know, Smith, the man who coerced Hillary into killing Simon, then ordered Barth to kill Hillary. That Smith.
No one replied.
And is there any doubt that Vlad seems to have taken an unusual interest in me?
As an example, Linda said.
More than just an example, trust me. I'm his ultimate objective. Even if you don't believe that, it can't hurt to give me one more chance to confront him before you do anything crazy that could get half of you killed.
No, my father objected, turning away. No one's putting you in harm's way. I won't allow it.
I just walked past seven of Barth's guards, and not one of them stopped me.
Why? Because Vlad can't risk me being harmed, and he's passed that order on to Barth.
I'm the only person in this valley who can confront Vlad.
What on earth can you accomplish by confronting the man who has his finger on the button that controls this valley?
Linda demanded.
We have children out there, and he may be the only one who can find them.
Probably so, because he's the one who took them.
You know that?
Who else?
Maybe, she returned immediately. All the more reason to play by his rules. He wants Barth out of the way. We give him what he wants.
I am giving him what he wants, I said.
Me. All I'm asking is that you wait. What do you have to lose?
You, my father said. I can't risk that.
You didn't answer my question, Linda said. What do you hope to accomplish?
I hadn't answered because they wouldn't understand the truth. But I could give them something else.
To take away his power.
I took their silence to be skepticism.
He still wants me to write in the book of history. If all else fails, I'll do it, but on my own terms. To do that, I have to get to the book. That means calling Vlad out, and I'm the only one he'll come to now.
No one voiced support.
All I'm asking for is one chance. Like I said, you've got nothing to lose by waiting.
We have everything to lose, Linda snapped.
We should be out there right now, ripping Barth's head from his shoulders.
Maybe she's on to something, Hank said over by the map. This all began with her refusing to write in that book. Maybe it's all just a test. Either way, I can't think of a better distraction than her calling Vlad out in the main square. You can bet Barth would be there. And where Barth goes, so do half his men.
The room remained silent, except for one of the sleepers, who rolled over and coughed.
The perfect time to go after the armory, he said.
This wasn't what I had in mind at all. I had to stall them, expose Vlad, get my father to see differently before they started a full-fledged civil war. Actually, I need you all to be there with me, I said. Hank ignored me.
Instead of the hydro plant, we create a second distraction south of town, set a house on fire. His voice held fresh enthusiasm. It would draw Barth south to deal with it. Best chance we'd have of taking the armory north.
My father wasn't agreeing, but he wasn't rejecting the idea either. It has to be tonight, I said, trying to buy time. You want a distraction? I'll give you one. But only after the sun sets. In the dark. We can't wait that long, Linda said. Besides, Vlad controls the sun. Yes, and it went down last night. There's no reason to think it won't tonight.
Rochelle's right, my father said. This could actually work. But I don't think I can show myself around Barth.
As long as Vlad's there, I think you'll be safe. It was a risk I had to take. He's after civil war, not just a few shots. The fact that my father didn't object to the bit about civil war gave me some hope. Maybe he was seeing past his rage. Tonight, I reiterated, you go with me and stay out of sight until Vlad shows himself.
And when he does?
You come out. I need you to see what I have to show. He thought about it for a second, then gave me a curt nod.
Fine.
The die was cast, and no one knew that I was blind, except me.
Chapter 31. I stood by the large fountain alone, clicking to see. I'd rolled both of my sleeves up, baring my shoulders. Not that I thought showing Vlad the white and green seals on my arm would undermine him, but I wanted them all to see the luminescent glow of white and green circles. It brought me comfort. Comfort because everything I hoped to accomplish depended on my speculation that I'd be able to see the book of history, just like I'd seen the page in the dungeons with Jacob. There was an energy about it that came with true sight. I'd spent the day alone in my room, away from anyone who might discover my blindness, alone and wrestling with a bipolar swing of emotions, one minute resting in the memories of the light, the next settling into deep self-pity that blindness was part of my journey, and I couldn't shake my terrible fear. Knowing that facing Vlad while blind would be no different from entering into my nightmare once again. It was amazing how quickly I reverted to the world's system of fear and control. Life happened in cycles of forgetting and remembering, Talia said. I knew that intimately now. My shirt was wet with sweat. I didn't want to be there, standing alone. I hated the fact that I saw no other way. As Linda and my father had planned, a group of 12 were stealthily setting up for the assault on the armory, adjacent to Barth's house, north. Several of them were armed with guns, the rest with axes and machetes. Another half dozen continued the search for the children with Linda, a compromise she'd demanded and received. The rest were south, preparing to burn Hank's house to the ground. A small sacrifice, he'd said. I couldn't stop the assault on the armory, but I could stop them from actually using those weapons if they got them. My father was the key, and I was the key to him. He waited behind Bill's hardware, safe for now and close enough to hear my signal. It was 7 o'clock. Had to be. I swallowed deep, gathered my resolve, and stepped up onto the edge of the fountain pool,
exactly where Vlad had stood to show us our false sky only yesterday. "Vlad!" My voice echoed off the walls of the church. "Vlad Smith! Bring me the book!" Nothing. But I had no illusions that he would just drop out of the sky. A small part of me thought he wouldn't show at all. "This is what you wanted," I cried out, feeling desperation. I waited with my feet planted on the wide edge, clicking into the darkness around me. "Vlad!" I heard the door to the church open, and I turned, clicking. A form, one of Barth's guards, stepped out carrying what had to be a machine gun in one hand and a crackling torch in the other. My mind flashed to other Earth. Why a torch rather than a flashlight? A second guard came out, carrying another torch. They walked down the steps to the edge of the lawn and planted the torches in the ground. The man on the right faced me. "I don't know what the deal is with you, but he said you'd be coming. He wanted torches when you arrived. So here you go. Torches." Then he turned and walked back up the steps. Two more guards with torches had emerged and stood on either side of the door. I had an audience of four. Then it was eight, because four more emerged, all armed, setting up a perimeter around the landing. Then nine, when a thick form I guessed to be Barth stepped out of the building and stood between his men, hands on his hips, like a gunslinger. Still no sign of Vlad. My palms were greasy. I heard soft padding of feet as two residents tentatively stepped out of the darkness to my right, then another, around the corner of the empty bakery. Barth stepped up, maybe to set the new arrival straight, when Vlad's voice cut through the still night. "It's okay, my friend. It'll do them good to watch." I twisted around, clicking. But I didn't need to click, because I could see the slight amber glow around his eyes. I hadn't expected to see more than the book, if he presented it to me. But he, being something other than human from other Earth, was visible to me. As was the slight glow from under his jacket, the Book of History. Vlad was leaning on one of two lamp poles that normally lit the courtyard. His legs were crossed, and he looked to be distracted by his hands. Maybe his fingernails. I couldn't tell because that part of him was only a blur. He spat to one side, unfolded his legs, and lifted his head. A few more residents had braved the night to see what all the yelling was about. Vlad had his audience. My father had his distraction. "You're early," Vlad said, stepping closer to the fountain. "Things are just starting to heat up here. I would have figured tomorrow, but here you are, which means one of two things." He stopped between two torches and stared at me. "Either you're bluffing, in which case you're being rather stupid, or you've learned more than those two seals on your arm have shown you. In which case, you're being just as stupid. So which is it?"
"Did he know I was blind?" "Now!" I cried. My voice carried, and I was sure my father had heard the simple signal we'd agreed on. Vlad's head turned toward the corner of the bakery. My father walked forward and stopped 40 yards from us.
"I see." Vlad sounded pleased, which concerned me a little. "A family affair, is it?"
His head swiveled back to me.
"By now you know that the Book of History has more power than any artifact imaginable on this plane. What you still don't know is that you're going to use that power for my gain."
"I know the power of the book, but I also know who you are and who I am.
As the second seal bears out,
he said,
and I cannot deny who I am.
He paused.
I've been doing this for 500 years, my little peach cobbler. Do you think a few circles on the arm of the 49th mystic will make me quake in my boots?
A circle of onlookers was forming around us, but I blocked them out, because for all practical purposes, I wasn't there. I was in Other Earth now, confronting what had to be a Shiitake who'd bred with a human to bring his darkness across dimensions. Regardless of dimension, all darkness was only a shadow. So then I was facing a shadow. Shadows vanished in the light.
Please, he said, heading slowly toward me. We're way beyond mincing words. Best to just get it all out in the open. The morons who watch us won't have a clue what to do with the truth. They're too bound up in fear of the Shadow Man. Hmm? Isn't that what you call me?
I call you Son of Tile.
He stopped with my use of the name. And I respectfully embrace my oneness with my master. We all have our roles to play. Play your hand, 49th, and I will play mine. At the end, we will see who's standing.
He peeled off his jacket, folded it, and draped it over the stone bench.
I could still see the slight glow from the book in the seam pocket. You're wondering why I'm not giving you the book, he said. Do you take me for a fool? Hmm? I know you didn't come to write what I need you to write. You're leaning on the knowledge found in your dreams. But that won't work here. After all, they're only implanted dreams. None of them are real. Nevertheless, I will speak on your terms.
The bit about my dreams being implanted was a lie for my father's benefit. But I was still preoccupied with the jacket he'd set down. I hadn't considered the possibility that he wouldn't allow me to write. Did he know that I intended to write my father rather than him into Other Earth? If so, my plan would die on its feet.
The light you think you can defeat me with is far too weak, he said. You're going to need the third seal at least, sweet peas. Unfortunately, half the town could be dead by then. They just can't seem to stop themselves, can they?
I tried to ignore my fear and think of a way to get that book.
I've had plenty of time to practice waiting for you, and now here you are, playing into my hands.
I faced him, letting the truth of what I had known in Other Earth well up inside of me like a storm. In Christi is all. I said it plainly, as simple fact. In Christi is in all. His hands shook as I spoke the truth. I am in Christi. He moved like a striking cobra, crossing the 10 paces between us in the space of half a breath. I'd come with no intention to fight. The thought hadn't even crossed my mind. And now he was a yard from my face, roaring with enough ferocity to sweep my hair back and rattle my bones. The pungent scent of dirty socks laced with vanilla filled my nostrils, making me nauseous. I frantically clicked and ducked instinctively, but not quickly enough to avoid his fist, which clipped the side of my cheek and snapped my head to the side. I staggered back and spun to find footing on the narrow fountain wall, but there was none. Yielding to my fighting instincts, I dived high, tucked my head under, landed on my right shoulder, and rolled to my feet. I could sense him making adjustments. My momentum was forward, and he would anticipate my trajectory. So I planted my right foot in the grass and threw myself up and backward over his head as his body rushed under me. Halfway through my backflip, I twisted sharply to my left and brought both fists around to the side of his head. My club of flesh and bone landed with a crushing impact that threw me wildly off axis. I twisted my body and landed on the ground, both feet firmly planted, facing him as he whirled back to me. None of the onlookers or guards moved. If my blow bothered Vlad, he'd fully recovered. He stood 10 paces from me, looking amused.
"Nice. But as you can see, in the end, your pathetic words are powerless."
"In Christi is all," I said again. "In Christi is in all."
"That's all you have? I've faced far worse."
But his voice was slightly strained. "In Christi is all."
Worry nipped at me.
"In Christi is in all."
"You think the power is in a few words?"
This time they had no effect on him.
"That I dread the path of shamans and faith healers? It's not about words. It's about the heart. Clearly, yours is still as black as mine."
My unease was descending into a full-blown panic. A soft whump filled the air to the south. They'd set fire to the house. But it was too early. I fisted my hands at my sides and hurled the words at him. "In Christi is all. In Christi is in all." Then again, screaming them now.
"Now you're just wasting my time," I heard Vlad growl.
He moved so quickly this time, and I was so distracted by my failure that I hardly noticed him coming. I only remember a terrible blow to the side of my head. I dropped like a rock with the cries of "Fire!" and "Rochelle!" echoing through my head. My father was yelling my name. The world around me was spinning, but I pushed myself to my knees.
"The book! Get to the book!"
"Rochelle!"
My father, feet pounding. Fearful for him, I twisted, clicking. He was veering toward Vlad.
"Leave her alone."
Barth was yelling orders. His guards were sprinting toward the sound of the roaring fire. Lunging like a sprinter out of the blocks, I shot toward that jacket. 5 long strides, and I was there. A terrible thud sounded behind me. My father had unwittingly given me a brief window and would pay a price, but I had singular focus now. I dropped over the jacket, dug my hand into the breast pocket, jerked out the book, fumbling. With shaking fingers, I flipped it open. The blank page before me glowed. The book had opened to a page with a pen folded into the spine. I grabbed it and scribbled the words as quickly as I could. "My father David into other earth." Vlad reached me and snatched the book from my grasp. He looked at the words I'd written and slowly turned his eyes down to me.
"Welcome to my world,"
he snarled through a twisted grin. His fist slammed into my temple, and the world winked out. Vlad Smith closed his eyes, groaning with satisfaction. She'd succumbed to his manipulations as planned. And her father, lying on his side, oblivious. He crossed to the man, ignoring the chaos. None of it mattered now. None but Barth, who had his gun drawn, intent on finishing what he'd started.
"If you even touch him, I will rip your guts out and feed them to the pigs.
Barth stepped back, confused.
Leave.
He left, like a dog with its tail tucked between its legs. Vlad grabbed David by his collar, dragged him over to the fountain, and plunged his head into the water, then jerked him out. The man sputtered and stared as consciousness found him, blinked, searching for meaning. But that would come later. The 49th clearly knew that David would awaken in the other world the next time he slept here. But did she also know that the book would follow anyone written into that world? It no longer mattered. Vlad shoved the book of history into the man's armpit, held him steady for a beat, hammered the top of his head. Like a bull hit by an iron wedge, the man sagged, unconscious in this world, alive in another. The book under his arm shimmered for a brief moment, then vanished. Sweet dreams, tissue top. Chapter 32. Darkness. The kind of darkness that one could call reduction of black itself. But only for a breath before David's mind entered the state called dreaming. Not just any dream, but a lucid dream in which he knew he was dreaming. In reality, he'd just made the mistake of crossing Vlad Smith, who'd crushed him with a single blow. Note to self, never cross Vlad. But he was slowly waking now, knowing he would make it right by doing what needed to be done. David opened his eyes, expecting to see the courtyard and the fountain, a synthetic black sky overhead. Instead, the sky above him was made of stone. He sat up and looked around a room, perhaps 20 by 20, lit by flaming sconces, 2 to a wall. Between 2 of the torches, a large blackened sculpture of a winged cobra with red rubies for eyes stared at him. He shivered. The serpent wasn't unlike the one Rachel had described from her nightmares. To his right, a golden bowl filled with a foul-smelling liquid. Daggers with jeweled handles and other medieval utensils that looked good only for prying and cutting hung on the wall to his left. His heart hammered. Where was he? In a dream. A nightmare. But it didn't need to be a nightmare. He couldn't remember the last time he'd felt true fear in his dreams. In part because he rarely remembered his dreams. In part because he'd studied them at great length for Rachel's benefit, and in doing so learned how to disassociate himself from those fabrications of the mind. I've made a mistake with Vlad, and as a result, I'm terrified. Now my mind is creating a scenario that will allow me to work through that fear of him safely. Dream researchers had long ago argued that nightmares provided the mind with this remarkable gift. I don't have to feel fear, but if I do, that's okay too. Same thing he'd told Rachel 100 times. He lowered his eyes to the cold surface on which he'd awakened. A gray stone table, one darkened by stains, blood stains. He was naked, except for a loincloth. He knew he was dreaming, but this particular dream was so lifelike that he was having a hard time distinguishing it from reality. Only logic told him as much. It was precisely these kinds of dreams that had afflicted Rachel for so many years. He twisted, saw a velvet curtain in a doorway, and was sweeping his feet off the table when his hand bumped an object on the stone surface at his side. The book.
Vlad's book. He brought the journal with him. Naturally. His mind was dipping itself into this fabricated reality through the power of both Rochelle's and Smith's persuasions. Even awake, the mind could sink deep into hypnotic suggestion. Something Rochelle had said at the tunnel tripped through his thoughts. What if the whole human race was seeing the material world through distorted perception, just like he was now, in this dream? It was the teaching of ancient mystics and of quantum physics, though it made no sense to any scientist. 100 years of experiments had shown over and over, without fail, that in some impossible way the world was being created in its current state by the consciousness of the observer. They called it the observer problem because it conflicted with all logic. Nearly all of modern electronics were soundly based on quantum principles, even though no one knew why they worked. There would be no cell phones without quantum physics. In this way, cutting-edge science was perhaps even more mystical than religion. In fact, it supported what many religions denied, namely, that humans had the power to change the world through thought and belief alone. He drilled these ideas into Rochelle her whole life. But this was a dream. He had to hold on to that simple truth. Motion to his right caught his attention and he turned. A scrawny man in a white robe stood in front of the doorway, staring at him. His skin was light gray and his hair long, knitted in dreadlocks. Around his neck hung a medallion of the same winged serpent that seemed to be the focus of this room. This was a priest. David was in a room reserved for sacrifices of some kind. It's a nightmare, David. Only a nightmare. A good part of his mind seemed to know that, but his heart was pounding, oblivious to logic. The man snapped his fingers without taking his eyes off David. Two others, much larger than the priest, stepped through the curtain and took up positions on either side of the table. They were dressed in black, with sheathed swords slung on their waists. "How did an albino find its way into our holy place?" the thin priest asked. David cleared his throat.
"I wasn't asking you," the priest snapped. "But since you seem so eager to tell me, answer."
David wasn't sure how to answer the man. He had no memory of being anywhere but here, at least in his dream.
"I'm dreaming," he finally said.
The priest slowly stepped around the table and was halfway around when his eyes fell on the book. He studied David with renewed interest.
"So you are an albino, but one who dreams of another world."
David's mind was fabricating a world taken from Rochelle's descriptions of her own dream world. In that dream world, she too was an albino. And these must be the Horde. This one in particular was called Bale. David knew it was all a fabrication, but his mind was quickly being swallowed by its own illusions. The fear he felt was undeniable.
"This is a dream. I'm dreaming you because my daughter, Rochelle, is having nightmares, and now my mind's recreating those nightmares. None of this even exists."
The priest's fascination grew.
"I see. And this daughter, who is she?"
"My daughter."
"Who is your daughter? In her nightmares, I mean. Who does she claim to be?"
"She's haunted by the Shadow Man. But like I said..."
"And tell me, do you know where your daughter is in this dream of hers?"
A pinprick of concern for Rochelle nipped at his mind. But none of it was real. He, if not Rochelle,
had to remain tethered to reality.
He shrugged, aware of the sweat snaking past his temples.
That I can't tell you, except to say that she's dreaming she was taken captive with one of your own. I can't remember the name. Perhaps I can help you. My name is Bale, David said. I do remember that. Servant of Tile. So you see, I can name these fears of hers, but I have no intention of making them my own. The priest had gone rigid. When he spoke again, his voice came slow and low, barely above a whisper.
No, of course you don't. And the name of the one who took her captive, was it by chance Jacob, son of Kurong?
Jacob, yes. They were taken together. The priest blinked.
By the Elianites?
Yes, yes, Elianites. But this...
Send for Kurong!
The priest snapped.
Yes, my lord.
The voice came from a third man who'd entered without David's awareness.
Tell him I have urgent news of the 49th.
Yes, my lord.
The guard dipped past the curtain and was gone. A dream, David. A dream. A dream. All illusion is as powerful in its effect on the mind as the truth. The mind can't distinguish truth from illusion using the five senses. But he was in a lucid dream, knowing it was only that, a dream. He had to cling to that knowledge. If he could work through this nightmare, maybe he could better help Rochelle work through hers. The priest approached him, long robe swaying about his ankles, deeply attentive.
You are correct in saying that this is only a dream. So tell me, what exists in reality?
A world gone mad that you'd know nothing about.
Mad how? By whose hand?
Our own hand. Nuclear fallout. DARPA.
Bale reached for the book, took it in his long, crooked fingers, and set it down on a long bench next to a line of four daggers.
Tell me, in these dreams of yours, is this shadow man who haunts your daughter, one named Vlad von Valerik?
David hesitated. Vlad Smith, you mean? But that's not the dream. This is.
Bind him to the table, Bael ordered. Do not harm him yet.
He walked for the exit. Without hesitation, the two warriors in black robes strode toward him.
Hold on.
The guard on the right slugged his temple, and David grunted. They muscled him back down onto the table, despite his frantic objections. In short order, they clasped his wrists and ankles in chains attached to iron rings at each corner of the stone table. Then they returned to their former positions. He now lay on his back, spread eagle, iron clasps digging into his wrists and ankles, chained to a stone table used for sacrifice. His body was shaking.
A nightmare, David. It's a dream. Just a dream.
He closed his eyes and lay as still as he could, begging himself to wake up.
Chapter 33.
I woke in the Elianites' dungeon with a start, my confrontation with Vlad in the courtyard still crashing through my mind. The face-off left me with conflicting emotions. On the one hand, I'd successfully written my father into Other Earth so he could see through Vlad's lies. Or at least I assumed I had successfully written him in. I'd never actually seen it work before.
On the other hand, my father had been attacked by Vlad, and I didn't know how he fared.